No, here's the great thing. You're looking at this screen here. Oh, hello, friend. You're looking at this screen here, and you're like, I'm having trouble seeing what's up there. You're not alone. I just wanted to warn you, you do not have some sort of ocular degeneration. My slides will have to be put up at some other point. Right now, just think of this as sort of artwork that goes between my lyrical voice that comes out. So my name's Jason Scott. How many people have seen talks by me before? Nice number. All right, the rest of you made a mistake. So name of this talk is, did you want to do the? Here, just
say. You're good. This is Jason Scott, Text Files.
So. So this is the DECSS case. I'm going to describe it, but I just wanted you to see this pile of documents. These are all the documents related to a court case. This would be all of the testimony that was entered in across the six-day trial. This would be the fuck you. This would be the no, seriously, fuck you. This would be the please, are you sure you say fuck you, to which this was the fuck you. So that's legal terminology. I just wanted to make sure you knew about it. I'm a veteran of talking, and so I'm really not one to buy into a lot of the stay up in front. And anyway, you guys have been enjoying an ironic Big Brother presentation by Snowden, so there's really no reason for me to do the same thing, so I hope you all don't mind that things are a little more interactive than they need to be. It's been 2 years since my last talk, so yay. So, Hollywood has a secret. Hollywood has a secret, and here's the secret, okay? If you take a image of a guy or girl, and then you show a picture of the opposite sex, and then you switch back to the first one, the audience will immediately decide that that person lusts, is watching, or is otherwise in the same physical space as the other person. In other words, the pictures sit quietly, and we do all the work. And the reason why is because we're human beings, and when you see something disappear into a rock, you know it's probably going to come out again. And when you see it the other side, you go, oh, it's out again. I'm going to eat it. And so we're kind of wired this way. We draw conclusions. We put things aside. That's what we do. And Hollywood, long ago, discovered that by putting these images together and hosting them somewhere, they could pull people out of their otherwise wretched and terrible lives and make them feel like they were someplace else. And over time, they refined that, but I often did it by giving you the same picture of the guy, looking at the picture of the girl, looking back at the picture of the guy. They quickly refined it to a picture of a car chasing after another car, in which the guy in the front car was someone you liked, and someone behind it was someone you didn't like. We have other stories, too. Not many. But this is what the secret was. The secret was the product inside is not that special. But if you're the only game in town, and you work hard to make yourself the only game in town, then that product is the product. And it's fantastic, and people will write film criticism about it, and everyone will be happy. So this is about a court case, and the court case is called technically Universal versus Ramirez, but many people call it the DECSS case. That looks terrible. How ironic that something about visual data being unencrypted looks so terrible, thwarted by HDMI. I like that. I like that. I like the irony. I'm going to go with the irony. Going to go with irony. So this is about a court case, but it's not about a court case. Because court cases are boring. Court cases aren't interesting unless you're in them. And what you really want to do is you want to look at what happened in a court case, and then you want to figure out what can you learn from it, what do we learn from it, or we'll just keep recycling the same problems like we recycle the same talks, like we recycle the same movies. So let's try to learn something new from this crazy dumb thing. One day I got a phone call, and I got a phone call, I mean, it was actually, I got a phone call. It was basically Emmanuel Goldstein, who for the purposes of this talk we'll call Eric Corley, and who wanted me to talk with the EFF because the EFF had a storage unit, and the storage unit was full of old EFF stuff. and they had hit the term limit. It had been like 10 years that this stuff had been sitting in there, and they said, we want to get rid of it. And they contacted the people who were in some of the cases to go, what do we do with the old junk from your case? In this case, it was for the DECSS case, and Eric Corley had been involved in that, and he said basically, you should give it to Jason Scott, and contacted me. And I said, fantastic. And I waited eagerly by my mailbox for it. 5 months later, while I was on my way on a vacation trip, a truck pulled up with a lot of boxes, and I was leaving in 2 hours. Desperate, as you can see, it's winter, my brother and I stacked it up and put plastic over it to protect it from the wind. And I also knew I didn't really have much place for this. I didn't have much space in my shipping container. Yes, I have a shipping container. And so I did the best thing to do, which was put it out on the internet with violins playing, going, this is history. Look where history is very cold. And waited eagerly for somebody to go, oh, history, we'll give you a warm cup of coffee and a little mug and let you sit by the fire. Inside, I printed some pictures. What you're looking at here is some hash and some encrypted files printed out for pages and pages. This is IRC discussions about DVDs printed by the ream. There were 75 boxes of material sealed up with obscure markings outside, only some of which caused me to twitch, with names like defendant and plaintiff's complaint and injunction. And inside, of course, was this whole thing about, you know, history. And I always love these little moments, like this little transcription from the thing where the guy has to spell what Google is. You know, do you go to any besides Hotbot? Yeah, actually, I went to Google, G-O-O-G-L-E. So I knew this was, like, weirdly historical and strange. And things like, I don't know, hard clipping a floppy disk to a piece of paper as a way to indicate the work had been done. Anyway, it was good to have this sort of historical data, and I collect a lot of historical data, and I thought that was kind of interesting, right? Well, it was the Potters, Heidi and Bruce, who stepped forward and said, we'll take it. And I drove a truck of 75 boxes down to their storage area, actually their garage, and loaded them up, barely having cracked one. But they took it. So God bless them. They took them and saved them. And that's where it ends, right? That's where it ends. This thing that was lonely found a home somewhere in the Washington, D.C. area and was soon to live an endless nothing life, once again stored away in the darkness of history and forgotten. But no. What it was, in fact, was something like this. So this is a quote from Isaac Newton. Isaac Newton, you know, he was a pretty intense dude. This was a guy who invented calculus to win a bet, right? When he was 27. That's the source of that whole "we got a badass here" quote when he talks about it, because he's talking about the fact that to win a bet, he invents calculus to prove what he's saying. And you're reading, you're not going to get this right off. Some of you will, and God bless you. But are not gross bodies and light controvertible into one another, and may not bodies receive much of their activity from the particles of light which enter into their composition? This is the beginning of the nuclear bomb. This is when human beings start figuring out that shit can blow up really fast, faster than we expect, and if we trigger off things, we will explode. It took a few years from 1706, but he was sitting around. I'll bet you he invented direct messaging too. I'm just going to tell you that now. Many of you might know about the 2600 case, the DECSS case, the DVD case, Universal et al. Versus Ramirez et al. It all has different names. Some of you may remember it with the snap-trap memory of some geek, or some of you might actually be completely unsure what it is other than it was bad. You may not even know what the verdict was. I'm not going to poll why I do that to you. But sitting on 2600 are the collections of PDFs of all the official stuff. In other words, the PDF version of this material. It's all sitting up there. So if you're the kind of person who wants to read through it line by line, knock yourself out. Knock out everyone around you. Read it home on the way to work while driving. Just do it. Have fun. All right, so basically, you know, you have these wonderful legal terms like appellate reply brief and so on, and I'll go into what the case was, but, you know, that's what it sits right now, a bunch of PDFs of the officially released things, right? Or you can go onto Wikipedia and read kind of their description of what this case was, and, you know, so basically here's what happened, right? There's this thing called the DVD spec, right, which was created to allow digital video discs, which were a form of digital entertainment. They were plastic pieces of discs. I have to say this because some of you are young. And they basically allowed you to store a certain amount of material on them in a digital form and allow a relatively simple player at the time to be able to not just play it, but be able to read menus from it, have subtitles, do a bunch of different video things. And in theory, the clarity was unbelievable and heretofore unseen on Earth. And cheap to produce over time. Well, it depended on a protection scheme of some sort. Mysterious and wonderful. Some sort of black box that sat inside of a chip and made it better, unless you were bad, and then it made it worse. And that's what it did. And somebody came up with a way to read it regardless of that quote-unquote protection. The reason given was, hey, there's no good DVD players for Linux. So you can't play DVDs on Linux, let's fix that. And so over the course of time, this thing came out, and a utility was created by a young gentleman, Mr. Johansson, who basically allowed you to do it. And it was called the DECSS utility because this was the content scrambling system, fantastic name, which enabled you to basically unread. Isn't that great? There it is. It's a little blurry, but there it is. This is the terrible thing. You run it, and combined with other things, it allows you to read a DVD and not worry about the content scrambling system. The program is very small, and it was linked everywhere. And what ended up happening was people put it everywhere because it was amazing and weird and interesting. I don't know how many of them understood it, but it went out there and it went everywhere. And so, as they say, the movie studio sued. And they sued a few people for it. And that was celebrated. As, oh my God, we've pissed them off. And they sued a bunch of people, citing the newly minted, you know, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, 1998, which enabled a whole variety of things to happen. And this code was everywhere, hosted everywhere, including at 2600 magazine. So the movie studios sued a bunch of people, including Eric Corley himself and later his magazine, 2600, for having this. They sought injunctive relief. They wanted many thousands of dollars. And, of course, they wanted him permanently banned from ever distributing this. So he took it down as per the request and instead replaced it with a list of mirrors. That's our manual. Just kicks you in the balls while being let out of the club. And so it ended up being linked, and they sued him over that. They said, you can't even link to a thing that does something bad, which was a very interesting innovation legally. And so, you know, when you have a court case like that, of course, it's got the geeks versus the old school versus everything else. It was a 6-day trial after months of preparation, and it was found to be not in 2600's favor. The other defendants all settled. 2600 fought on, as they are wont to do, and they lost. So they appealed, and in a grand decision, they also agreed. So the case was a loss. It was a blow against free speech in some definitions. It was definitely a blow against 2600. Luckily, there were no monetary damages applied. But the judge in it, Judge Kaplan, in a 80-plus page ruling, which is in there, says basically, no, we have to maintain what the movies are, because the movies are very special. And we don't want people to stop getting movies about a guy looking at a girl. Now, the whole thing about copyright, I mean, you know, I love talking about that debate. Here's an 1880 Declaration of Copyright on corn harvesters and a warning against the people who are pirating corn harvesters. Don't do it. Only get the good ones. You'll be liable for damages if you make, sell, or use infringing machines that make corn. So we've been angry a long time where somebody goes, blah, don't steal my shit. I have a thing on it that says no. We've been doing this a long time, right? So the Digital Millennium Copyright Act was simply an extension of that idea. It said, okay, now there's all these different things we're going to do that are digital. So that's weird. Wow, you have the ability to make something make infinite copies of itself. Well, that breaks something. You also have the ability for it to be perfect every time. You have the ability for it to be passed everywhere simply. Well, here's a bunch of laws saying that's all kind of bad. And it's been improved upon over time. You know, in this country, if you videotape a movie, or let's say you use a digital camera, but let's go with videotape. I like that better. Let's say you take in an RCA Panasonic VHS camera, and you walk in and you record The Expendables 3. And for some reason, the gendarmes in their little fucking red vests walk up and grab you. How many years are you liable for? 5. You get off easy. Yeah, 5. Record a movie, 5 years of jail. $250,000 fine. That's very important to this country. We are a country where if you record something off a screen, you are liable for 5 years of prison, $250,000. This must be really friggin' important. This must be the golden child. It's because of the Motion Picture Association of America. They have a perfect right to exist, and what they do and they get involved in makes sense. What they are is all of the motion picture and Hollywood firms kind of don't like each other. They really kind of don't, but they all agree they have things they agree upon that need to be enforced and looked at and lobbied for. But the problem is that they never want to sit in each other's goddamn office. So why not have an office that they all agree that they'll listen to? And that's the Motion Picture Association of America. They created the rating system, for instance. They were the ones who certify different kinds of sound. They're the ones that dictate what the size of a screen is. They involve themselves in all sorts of intercompany processes in motion pictures. But they also deal in enforcement. And they've gone a little more than enforcement. They've actually worked into going, wow, this current society is not ready to protect our stuff to the level we want. What can we do to warp reality to our needs? Do I sound angry? I'm not really angry. It's just more like, oh, man. You know, like when you like see a cat or a deer like jump out of one car and get hit by another, and you're like, oh, man. It's kind of that like sad, withering disappointment in the whole process, kind of. Just kind of a sadness, right? I mean, this is a city where we just killed somebody because you were sold the wrong cigarettes. I mean, you got to keep perspective. But there's this thing going on. And so, you know, they have all these things that they've put up now, and they speak the crazy language. You can click, but you can't hide. Look out. And that should be the end of it. Hooray, we do not steal anything anymore. That's it. That's how it goes. Can I get a round of applause for the end of infringement? Wow, that's fantastic. That's a pretty good half-hearted sarcastic clap, but I'm telling you, when you're doing sarcasm and you want to make everyone in the room feel uncomfortable, you got to whoop it up, okay? Germany has to kick someone's ass, and you're like, yeah! So that's just so in the future, when you get sarcastic clap, please do that. Sarcastic claps are your most powerful weapon in today's society. No, it's not the end. Of course not. There's people like me. Now, so, Okay. All right. You don't need anything? Do you need a water? Do you want a water? No, okay. So I'm this dude, I get old things. I have textfiles.com, I've made documentaries, I speak about history, I look up stuff, I kind of buffer the area between people who are like, what do I do with all these eggs? And people going, what do I do with all these egg cartons? And saying, oh, you two gotta meet. And later, oh, eggs and egg cartons. And I'm just like, I don't need credit, I don't need my name on the cartons, I'm just so glad those eggs found their cartons. And I do that all the time. Someone's hard drive comes to me, makes a whole bunch of difference in the world. Talk to people who are like, I don't know where to host this. I only have, it's 1 gigabyte of data. And I'm like, I'll handle it. I'll take it. It's okay. So I walk around and I'm this weird angel of death that sits around at the end of things. And I say, oh, wow, no one cares anymore. So it was with that reputation that I was given these old files that you might recall were stored away, again, having lived 10 years inside of a box, unlooked at, unloved, forgotten, and the DECSS case, which you are now an expert on, living away. So let's talk about America. America! So here's the great thing about America. So we have a current situation. How many people here have ever been the plaintiff? Okay. How many people here have been the defendant? Not bad, not bad. Same here, defendant. Defendant, whoa, fist bump, defendant. It's not very nice to be the defendant in America right now. Here's why. We've put up a whole variety of system of laws, and the systems of laws work on this theory. You hold a 1,000-pound weight over someone's head, and you show them a picture of your family, and you say, wouldn't it be terrible if this weight fell on you and your family never saw you again? For the mere price of $500, sign this paper, sit over here, don't make us have an actual court case, you will not get the 1,000-pound weight. And then people see the turnover and they go, the system works. System doesn't work, buddies. Doesn't work at all. We have places where people are just heralded in and their fake pro bono lawyer says, just take the plea, and they walk away. And so it's like, why get hit by a truck when you could get hit by a golf cart that drags you for the rest of your life? And anybody here who's a defendant, especially a defendant who's not defending themselves against something that is the course of right, makes the discovery, as Emmanuel did. You know, there's problems with the case, okay? There's problems with the DECSS case. First of all, I'm sure he's going to get angry when he reads this somewhere, but the lawyer for the defense was kind of a dick. Kind of a dick. He is badgering witnesses. He is arguing with the judge. There are cases that we have. I have tapes of the actual, you know, it's one thing to have a deposition where you can see it says, the lawyer says, no, sir, I want to know this, in fact. Could you please tell us? And then the other lawyer going, objection, this is badgering. And to hear the tape where he's like, and what about this and this and this in that tone of voice? What kind of case is that going to go for you? So not a great lawyer. Not a great lawyer for this case. I'm sure he's wonderful for other cases, but this wasn't a great case. And so when you are in that situation, Eric found himself what we often find ourselves in, which is that the legal system is like the world's scariest combine harvester, a shredder, and it's the worst kind of shredder. Have you guys all seen the video of the thing that shreds a tree in 2 seconds? Yeah, look at that. We're a great country. All of you know this cultural touchstone. Basically, it starts with a tree and goes, wham, like that tree's gone. Environmentalists love it. Well, that maybe that's not so bad. I mean, if somebody threw you into that and said, sorry, man, and just went, wham, you could handle it. But what happens if the combine harvester grabs your leg? And you're like, oh, what's wrong with me? Oh, man. Hey, everybody, combine harvester, you know. And they're like, oh, no, there's no off switch. It just goes. And you're like, what? And they're like, yeah, no, it's going to keep going. You're like, what? What? No, it's like starting to hurt, buddy. You got to, no. It will go slowly for between 1 and 3 years and shred you to pieces. Your counteroffer is that you can cut off your leg or something else. I have seen what the system does to somebody who's under that 1,000-pound weight. I've lost friends to that. So I know that situation exists. So I can forgive Eric for just wanting this terrible thing out of his life. Until they decided there was no particular thing against him, he was, he was worried. He was sitting there going, maybe I'm going to be ordered to get $250,000 for this. You know, he didn't know. He lived under that. And it just eats your guts inside. I was sued for $120,000 for printing an IP address. would have cost me a lot. And I had a really nice guy who used to work for the company who sued me and said, oh, fuck those guys. I'll pay all your legal bills. That guy threw $20,000 into a fire for me, which tells you he must have been really angry. I like that guy. He had a concealed carry and an Uzi. Anyway, so concealed carry plus Uzi equals party. Anyway, so, yeah, you know, taking the whole, you know, way you look at the world, right? I mean, there is something to be said for, like, going the extra distance, putting yourself out a little bit and trying to do it. And that's what I think is more important than the particular court case is standing up for what you believe in. I know this may sound like empty words, but they're not. Because there's always that moment. There's that moment in that meeting. There's that moment in your life. There's that moment in a court case where someone says, you know, here's the easy way out. Just cut the leg off. Just cut the leg off. The 1,000-pound weight will never fall. And you know what? Fuck the weight. And that's a decision you make with your family and you. And some of you will have to make which decision you want. But it might even be something as simple as, do we make this data exportable or do we lock it down? Do we, you know, share what we're learning or do we hide it? Do we take advantage of this? Do we put it away? Do you, as an analyst, watch some crazy shit go by the transom at your job? And do you go to Hawaii and then to Russia, a natural jump? So there's this weird, weird way the world is working right now that we have this situation, right? So let's go back to the bomb. let's go back to this thing. So here's this whole piece of documents. They were discarded. They were thrown away. And by thrown away, they were thrown into me. All right? And there's 75 boxes, and that could have been the end of it. Here they are. So what we did was, at ShmooCon this year, we took the boxes and we put them out. And ShmooCon, love those guys, ShmooCon.com, they set up all the boxes and the videotapes and set up scanning stations. And we had volunteers during this show sit down and scan. We didn't get a lot. We got a lot, but we didn't get a ton. We didn't get all of it. We had people sitting down and looking for quote-unquote juicy stuff, quote-unquote interesting stuff. I didn't tell them what to scan. This looks interesting. Scan it. Scan it, scan it. Why not? We scanned about 8,000 pages in one weekend. And we had the boxes out. People could try to be their own quasi Columbo and look it up. You know, it was kind of nice. Actually, it was very nice. And, I mean, there was even, you know, like, weird stories on the side of these things, and what did this mean, and so on. Some of it's redundant. There'll be four or five copies of the same thing in four boxes, thank God. But, you know, they were kind of interesting. This is by far my favorite picture, and here's why. Dad, daughter. They're scanning side by side, and she's asking what the legal terms mean, and he's telling her. And she just wants to know what the case means. She's like, oh, he's saying that there's going to be extra money he has to spend if he goes this way. And she's like, and what's this part? And why are they doing this? And they just sat there and had a little law lesson between the two of them for like 2 hours. In the middle of a con they paid friggin' money for that's not easy to get into. That's amazing. That's the kind of family get-together I think we all need to have, isn't it? Just sit around reading legal cases and answering them to your kids. Man, Hollywood. So, you know, I mean, Hollywood is an example of a very entrenched industry, okay? And it's very fun within a certain range to beat up Hollywood and punch them in the face, and isn't that fun and whatever else. You know, they have elements of, you know, I'm not going to say it's, they're organized crime-y. You know, it's like a little touch of the mafia to them, but the reason why is because they have a very strong control over a certain number of things, and they execute very, very strong control over it, and we notice it. It's in the open. That's creepy. Like when it turned out that like Pixar, creator of Up, were like involved in like wage fixing, you're like, oh, man. But you didn't see that day-to-day with Pixar. You weren't like, wow, those guys, the WALL-E people. But oh well, everyone's corrupt, Hollywood most of all. So inside of this thing was evidence that was, you know, not entered into the case. So there's all sorts of interesting things in here, and the fact is that's what's kind of fun because, you know, when you go through trash, You know, we really got out of the trashing aspect when they finally figured out how to lock down the central office trash barrels. And they also figured out how to shred really well. When cross-cutting came, there are a lot of old-school hackers who were like, oh, man. Oh, man. There's a lot of, you know, good old-school New York taggers who were like, God damn it. You know, the thing where they can clean a train car in, like, 2 minutes. Oh, man. So the cross-cutting shredder was not your buddy. These aren't shredded. And, you know, what's interesting is that they kind of tell a different narrative of the whole thing that I think is interesting in a boring sort of way in terms of here's all of these things that was the other side. I don't think any of it will surprise you. It might surprise you that it's written down somewhere. But it's more a case of, like, what I want you to walk away from is a realization that this is always happening. That this is happening in Nokia and Microsoft and the NSA and your local bodega and your other friends and everything. People are keeping dual narratives. And sometimes the streams cross, but not often. And entering into the world with that, that's your first line of security, is realizing that the whole game of humanity is fixed. Just so you know. Is that cheery enough? Is that cheery? I was trying to be upbeat about that. I mean, it's fixed. Woo! I said sarcastic. Oh, well. Anyway, there we go. Smattering golf clap of sarcasm. I cast a +5 star. So, you know, it's not going to, you know, when you look back at, like, the 2000s and you see this kind of stuff, get ready for piracy.com and everything else, you know, it's kind of interesting. And you have a whole stuff about, like, the great cyber robbery and the whole portrayal of, like, how it's going to be terrible when this all happens. This is all circa 1999, 2000 articles in Variety, and it shouldn't surprise you that if the MPAA wants something in Variety, it's getting into Variety. You know, when Valenti calls for the end to invasion of the copyright snatchers. Jack Valenti. How many people here know who Jack Valenti was? The man's dead, you cowards. Cowardice! That's good, all right. If you can't protect what you own, you don't own anything. So here's what Jack's job was. Jack's job was to be the clarion call, the messenger of infringement, power, and what needed to be done for our friend, the Hollywood cartel. And he was good at it. So what I like here, this is something that's very important. Here's, if you can't protect what's yours, you own nothing. And the other one is, if you can't protect what you own, you don't own anything. These are two different cases. This one went to Congress. This one goes to the people. And I just thought it was interesting that they thought that's a better way to phrase it for the people. You own nothing. And then the other one is the more appropriate, right? You don't own anything. Anyway, Jack was always kind of doing this stuff. Here's the quote, that the money quote, right? The money quote. Answering a question and responding to another lobbyist. One of the Japanese lobbyists, Mr. Ferris, had said that the VCR, I know I'm reading off, I'm breaking that rule, but fuck it. If I'm saying something wrong, forgive me. He said the VCR is the greatest friend that the American film producer ever had, and I say to you that the VCR is to the American film producer and the American public as the Boston Strangler is to the woman home alone. This was during a congressional hearing on recording of copyrighted works in 1982 from Jack Valenti. Okay? And I'm really sad because in some ways, this is like the Rio is to Duran Duran. It's the one everyone knows, and there were so many other great Duran Duran hits. Replace Duran Duran with something else that'll make you sneer. The point is that this was just one mere phrase in a lifetime of lyrical phrasings that were just beyond belief that came out of this guy. And I think it's unfair how we usually portray him. So this is the guy I want to remember. This suave motherfucker. That guy, oh my God. You looked at him and you were like, what do you need, sir? And he would say, you know, we got a business here. Business has got a lot of problems. Maybe you can do something to alleviate that problem. I mean, that's kind of the way I want to remember this guy. I less want to remember him this way, which, of course, is the scary, screaming eagle of movie freedom. There he is, man. Man, that guy. This is recordings of him from the testimony, by the way. And by the way, I mean, you know, I've put these online. If you want, I mean, if it was your hope, pro or con, as to whether or not it affected the case, if you want to listen to the lawyer scream at him for 1 hour, it's up there. If you want to hear him just badger this man at 6 in the morning, and he's sick, I mean, he's really, he's not faking it, he's pretty friggin' sick that morning, he's got like the flu, and he's been basically dragged in, and he's being screamed at the whole time. Well, if you wanted that, it happened. That fixed everything, didn't it? But there he is. You know, he was part of this group. And so part of this narrative was like this, all these groups were like, how are we going to protect ourselves? And the way that they were like, we're going to protect ourselves is we need to like look at this digital thing. Now, the digital thing has already happened, right? This is all circa 95, 96. It's kind of happened. It's not as big as it could be, but it's kind of happened. And they're like, all right, all right, let's start thinking about digital. How are we going to do digital? Well, we can't just, and what you realize is the brutish way that they go about it, which is, how are we going to do this? Well, are they going to be able to steal it? Make them stop. This was a group that tried, lobbied, and failed to have VCRs not rewind as a copy protection measure. When they started to work on this particular, you know, DVD scheme, they realized that some of the protection scheme would be undone by some models of VCRs, and they were preparing to badger and sue the companies that took them away. They hired some good people, I find. All these different people to work on the content scrambling system. In fact, there's a beautiful document that describes all the different ways one would attack any digital stuff in the future, created by some of the finest minds that they could hire. IBM, Rand Corporation, Apple, who, you know, all were more than happy to describe ways in which copy could be protected. This is all very informative things. These are very well-paid people describing casual hacking versus happenstance versus sophistication, high sophistication, low resource, high sophistication, a whole set of language that they were keeping to themselves until now. The overall scheme is not especially resistant to sophisticated hardware-based hack methods. The low resistance is due to inherently weak cryptography. To place the scheme in perspective, it is a factor of 10 to the 6th minus 10 to the 4th weaker than a scheme based on the data encryption standard. So they were like, maybe you ought to do something about that. And it's not their fault, they claim. There's a lot of toadying back and forth. I love this document. This is trying to portray all the different ways you could approach. And the reason it interests me is because to show how you don't want the content stolen, you want to talk about the peasants. And your problem, of course, is, you know, some peasants have ladders, but most can't swim. But they don't have special clothing. They can't get past the guards. So you have a combination of guards, boiling oil, a moat, a fence, and the peasants, eagerly awaiting to find out when Expendables 4 is coming out. Oh my God, Need for Speed 38 is on its way. Oh my God. No, they dug up the guy. It's amazing. They dug him up and they scanned him. That's crazy, edgy shit. Let's go watch that. And I want to, you know, if you, you know, please remember this, that somebody thought it was okay to refer to the consumer as peasants and to describe as the entire thing as a life or death struggle to protect the castle. Whoever made this because they knew that would fly in the boardroom, right? And then there was like another problem, which they didn't really think about, which we should think about in the future. Anyone here ever have an Apex DVD recorder, player? Ah! Here's thing about the DVD player. It had an admin testing mode. And the problem with it was you did this, turn it on, do no disk, hit setup, do your shit, press track forward in this situation, and the loopholes menu is displayed. And you can change the region, you can turn off the encryption, you can turn off Macrovision, and there's a little thing down here you can't quite see. It says, you should not be here. They sold 500,000 of those. That happened. Because basically the guys who make this were like, fuck it, we're just going to do this. It makes it easier to work with it. Leaked out. It's also interesting to note that when the DECSS case happened, they hired a private investigation firm. And the private investigation firm gives a, you know, if you're sitting around in your IRC channel, and the firm was hired, and the firm did amazing amounts of work. Here they are doing a timeline of who came with what piece in DECSS over the course of the year. all the way down to the name and what part they were and where they were and what part they provided. And they figured out that some persons unknown provided some of the information and so on. But man, we should nail that kid. That kid. Mr. You know, Johan's code and the code on Slashdot are one and the same. You know, Johan, don't public post. But could he send a private copy? Oh, he released the code. Paul calls him brave. So this is another interesting document. This is a PR firm that was hired to say, now that we're going to sue the fuck out of this little kid, how do we deal with that? I don't know if you've ever read a PR document before. It is the mask of humanity unmasked. It is the wolf behind the door. You know, there's concern it's going to cause a PR backlash. It's great language. It's going to cause a PR backlash. We should be concerned. Retailers will be angry. They'll think that we're no good at what we do. The market for early adopters to the mass market, they're going to see this and get scared. We have to do something, right? In terms, there's two key sexy stories that could be of interest. The 15, 17-year-old boy, human interest story. Hacking of the DVD encryption, a giant corporate industry screw-up story. The boy is integral to the story. So, despite the fact that he is Norwegian, and while we could desire any focus to be on the Scottish man, the Scott story is dot, dot, dot. It's that kind of just ripping it open and seeing what's there. The backlash, if it happens, is likely to be huge American film giants destroying the boy, and the boy turned into a modern-day genius who didn't realize what he was doing, the war game scenario, a David and Goliath story. Now, this is happening anytime you find yourself on the wrong end of something and you're fighting the big Goliath, by the way. This is happening behind the scenes. So I just want you to be aware of that. They're hiring a place to go, how do we couch this so we look awesome? You know, so the thing is, what I want you to understand, you know, is less that, oh, yeah, there's some goofy, juicy stuff about this particular case that didn't make it into the court documents and isn't that. I want you to, like, think about the fact that this happens every time we have this sort of legal thing, and this is what goes on, I know. And we're going to always, always, always keep our eyes open, right, to knowing that this is the situation going on, that we don't just deal in the truth and justice, we deal in narratives, image, and wonder. We deal in telling what we're doing. We deal in making ourselves known to each other, the presentation form versus what logic should tell you. So many geeks go down hard because they say, logic, that's what hurt you, was the whole way of saying, well, logic says this should be this way. And it's like, no, a completely feral enforcement system has decided to fuck you hard using every tool, and we're just arming them more. Now, there's always ways around it, of course. There's cute little moves you can do that says breaking this seal constitutes acceptance of the end user license agreement. It's funnier when I don't have to say it, but what are you going to do? Yeah, there's always going to be rebellion, and I want that. I think life should be fun. I think we should enjoy ourselves, but also keep in mind what's behind it. That's the real sunset. That's the real happy ending. Don't ever lie in your bed going, well, at least I didn't make a fuss. Okay? Thank you very much for your time. There will be no questions because we don't have the time, but I'll be wandering about in a very rakish hat making myself known. I would love to see you all. This is a very special social time for me to see so many of my friends out there. Thank you, friends.